Hello, and welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mitchell, he's Slim.
Hello.
And together we will dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll also take a peek at our own watch list, all under 30 minutes, or Mia will keep saying whole horror.
I think I want a refund just from hearing you say it now. Mitchell, your favorite musician, this is a rumor, I don't know if this is confirmed, but your favorite musician, Weird Al, finally making an appearance on Weekend Watchlist. How do you feel?
This is the first time that I'm hearing that Weird Al is my favorite musician, but we'll roll with it. We'll roll with it.
Thank you.
He seems like a very nice man.
Thank you for playing along. This week, we will talk about the Roku Channel's big bet with that Weird Al movie and Florence Pugh's period piece, The Wonder, and Causeway, starring Jennifer Lawrence. We'll also look back to see what everyone thought of last week's releases, your community reviews, tagged Weekend Watch List, and of course, our own shuffled watch list later in the show. And maybe we'll even hear from the Scream King himself, Justin Long.
Well, potentially more from Justin later, but for right now, it is time to get weird. Al, that is.
Another refund. That's two refunds right off the bat in the first 90 seconds.
Weird, colon, the Al Yankovic story directed by Eric Apple on 23,000 watch lists coming out from, as Slim mentioned, the Roku channel where we're all watching our movies. The synopsis for this one, exploring every facet of Weird Al Yankovic's life from his meteoric rise to fame with early hits like Eat It and Like a Surgeon, to his torrid celebrity love affairs and famously depraved lifestyle, this biopic takes audiences on a truly unbelievable journey through Yankovic's life and career, from gifted child prodigy to the greatest musical legend of all time. How do you feel about that synopsis?
I think that synopsis kind of teases out what to expect with this movie a little bit. I did not grow up a giant Weird Al fan. I was always Weird Al adjacent, you know, knew his music. Love to have a great time. So I went in pretty much in the dark when I watched this on the Roku channel. So maybe people are wondering, like, how do I watch this? I don't have a Roku. Can I watch this? The answer is yes. If you have like a smart TV or one of those streaming sticks or whatever, you can just install the Roku channel and probably watch this. I like this a lot. It's funny. I thought it was like Hot Rod meets the Naked Gun. And this, the plot is just so dumb and stupid and funny and insane. A lot of the gags are, you know, he's just like this amazing musician and he has uncovered this form of music that once he plays it for his roommates, it's like the coolest thing they've ever heard. And they're saying like, you're going to be the biggest thing ever. It's just so fun. I had a great time watching it. What did you think?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it too. I grew up like knowing Weird Al and knowing like the hits, but like Amish Paradise and the, I can't remember the name of it, but the Star Wars one that's parodying American Pie. Like I know the hits, but I'm not like super into Weird Al like a lot of people are. Mm-hmm. And I had been seeing a lot of comparisons between this and Walk Hard, even from people just like watching the trailer, which Walk Hard was not a movie that I particularly cared for. I thought it was just kind of like one bit that was really drawn out over like 2 hours. It just felt kind of long for me. So I went into this a little bit skeptical, but yeah, I think that the Hot Rod comparison, I think, makes a lot of sense. I think that it is more comedically in the vein of what the Lonely Island guys do with their movies like Hot Rod and Popstar than something like Walk Hard, where they are just really leaning into the stupidity of it all in a really, really fun way. Like they are just taking the piss out of like all of these biopic tropes. That one of the recurring bits that I really loved about it is, so like in doing these musical biopics, you have the actors like lip syncing the songs and they bring in like a real singer to do the singing voices for it, you know? Mm-hmm. And for this one, they are not even pretending for like a single second that Daniel Radcliffe is singing these songs. They are basically just like overlaying the actual Weird Al tracks anytime he opens his mouth. And it is for like the singing bits. And it is so funny. Like it did not wear out on me at all. Like it was so funny for me every single time they did that. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of funny bits that are in this. Maybe by like about the midway point, Evan Rachel Wood comes in as Madonna and like there's a lot of stuff going on with like that. They like go down that track and it like started to wear on me a little bit. Because it is kind of like a gimmicky idea that is stretched out for, you know, an hour and 45 minutes. So it did get a little bit tedious for me towards like the end, but then the final act really kicks back in and like the ending is sensational. So there's still like funny bits throughout. I really enjoyed it a lot more than I was expecting it to.
Yeah, it definitely feels like this would be a great theater experience with friends. Mm-hmm. Amanda the Jedi left review. Any day I get to see Daniel Radcliffe and Evan Rachel Wood in the flesh is a good day. Watch with friends.
Yeah. Gemma saw it at a theater in a big festival crowd, and her review says, completely, utterly, almost perfectly stupid. As great an example as any for the continued existence of film festivals and indie cinemas and seeing comedies with the crowd, throw out the Act 3 fat suit and you've got a full 5 stars. Which, yeah, I agree. I mean, I watched it late at night alone in my home. You know, it's not as sad as it sounds. I had a nice time, but I did feel throughout that like I wish that I had been seeing it in a theater like late at night with like a packed crowd. Like you can definitely just feel that energy of people just, having a ball with it.
Let's move on to the big Florence Pugh movie, the one everyone's talking about, The Wonder, not Don't Worry, Darlings. By the way, I think that's coming to HBO Max next week.
November 7th.
Holy smokes. Is it time for me to finally watch Don't Worry, Darling?
I've been telling, Sam and I have been looking at it. It's on VOD right now. You can pay $20. And I'm like, you know what? We're not going to pay $20 for this one.
The Wonder, directed by Sebastian Lelio, on 19,000 watch lists. This isn't going to be in theaters and then Netflix on November 16th. Set in the Irish Midlands in 1859, as an English nurse, Lib Wright, goes to a tiny village to observe what some see as a medical anomaly and others a miracle, that a girl has survived without food for months. Tourists flock to see 11-year-old Anna O'Donnell, and a journalist has come to cover the sensation as two strangers transform each other's lives in a story of love pitted against evil. So Florence Pugh, Netflix, period piece. Mitchell, what did you think?
Yeah, so I watched The Wonder last night, and I thought it was pretty good. I think that I maybe was more, the synopsis is interesting. The love pitted against evil thing is interesting to me in the synopsis, because I didn't really pick up
you
on
didn't
that
sense
too much.
The evil among the townspeople.
I think that more than anything, I was really impressed with like the aesthetics of it. The cinematography is gorgeous. It looks like from the jump almost. There are some very interesting bookends with the movie that maybe we could talk about. But the crux of the film, where we're seeing the narrative take place, it almost looks like you're like watching the movie by candlelight in this really interesting way. Like it's kind of like hazy. And I really was just really drawn in by that. The score is phenomenal. So I was really compelled by what was going on aesthetically, even maybe more so than what the story's doing necessarily. But Florence Pugh, I think, is fantastic. I think she's one of our best like actors for sure, especially like of her generation. And I think that, you know, I haven't seen Don't Worry, Darling yet. I'm excited to see her in that. But I think that she's great in this. What did you feel about it?
I liked it. I had a Boss Baby moment while watching because I was thinking about how I was watching this on Netflix, and visually I was getting Power of the Dog vibes. Mm. And lo and behold, same cinematographer but for both movies, Ari Wegner. And I liked A Fantastic Woman, one of his previous films. I liked this too. I thought the score was great. Yeah. I saw some criticism of the score, but I thought the score was just a perfect fit. It doesn't feel like it fits in this time period, but visually, it fit with the visuals, fit with the vibe for me. And you're right, it does have some bookends to this movie that I've never seen ever in a movie. Some reviews, I think, even talked about how, like, when you're first watching it, you might have thought you hit play on the wrong movie. But it's very strange. Never seen it before.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like Dogville a little bit, but just for, like, the first and last like 3 minutes, it's very bizarre. But I mean, check it out for the bookend, see what you think. Write about it on Letterboxd. We've got a few reviews to read out here. Nicole Ackman says, "The Wonder was not what I expected, but so gorgeously atmospheric. Florence Pugh proves again that she's truly one of the best actresses of our generation in this film that grapples with faith and English-Irish relations. Excellent period costumes, hair, and makeup."
Yeah, and you were talking about the candlelight stuff. It makes it look grainy. Like when I was watching it, I was like, wow, this looks really dark, really grainy. Almost, you know, I'll have to do some digging to see how they filmed it to make it give it that old look. Paul Ayama, stirring, superbly crafted period drama that I think went really underrated at the fall festivals. Sisyphean social horror hidden inside examination of faith and insular communities is a clever turn. Florence is really terrific in this, a different flavor for her, but she does the fierce and sober vigor so well.
Theaters Now, it'll be on Netflix on November 16th. Another one that you can catch streaming on your services that is out this week is Causeway, directed by Lila Neugbauer on 16,000 watch lists. This one is in theaters and on Apple TV Plus. The synopsis, a U.S. soldier suffers a traumatic brain injury while fighting in Afghanistan and struggles to adjust to life back home in New Orleans. When she meets local mechanic James, the pair begin to forge an unexpected bond. This one stars Jennifer Lawrence, her first film since Don't Look Up, which she was away for a little while. She's back in full swing now. And Brian Tyree Henry plays the mechanic. Slim, you haven't seen this one yet. What are your kind of vibes on Causeway? Are you excited for it?
Poster looks good. The vibes that I get from the Letterboxd page, it looks like a dreary watch, like a dramatic, dreary, maybe you need to be in the mood to watch one of these things. So what did you think? You ventured in to Causeway.
I did. I watched Causeway. The first word in my review is dreary.
We're on the same wavelength, just on poster alone.
Tracks. It is. I mean, it is like a particular kind of watch. It is a character drama where not a lot happens narratively. It's about, you know, these two characters kind of bonding. And it feels like a Sundance-y kind of movie from like the mid-2000s, which I really like, and I really miss those kind of movies. I feel like we don't get a lot of them these days, especially ones that actually feel and look like real movies, which I think that Lila does really well here with her directing. It really is just focused on these characters kind of bonding, and maybe it's a little bit kind of surface level with these examinations of this trauma and like this readjustment back to life. Maybe I wish that it could have dug a little bit deeper in certain elements, but it's really nice to see Jennifer Lawrence back in a movie like this, that it is just more like a straight down the line character drama, something like, you know, like A Winter's Bone that I feel like she hasn't done in a while. She was doing like the superhero thing. I am not a fan of Don't Look Up by any means. So it was good to see her doing something like this. And I love Brian Tyree Henry, I think, is one of the best actors working right now. I think that he is such an engaging presence. And I think he just does, like, he makes mincemeat out of line deliveries in this movie while giving off the impression that he's barely even trying. Like, he's just so natural in his element as an actor that he doesn't even seem like he's breaking a sweat. And I just think that he's tremendous. And I think it's another great performance from him.
Remember the Don't Look Up discourse? Feels like eons ago. It wasn't that long ago. Should we go back? Don't Look Up discourse episode.
My most popular or my second most popular review on my Letterboxd profile is my 1-star review of Don't Look Up. And honestly, stop liking it, please. Please, people, give more likes to positive reviews.
I need to Don't Look Up. Pause for editing. Oh my God. Nearing 500 likes on this 1-star Don't Look Up review. I'll have that linked in the episode notes if anyone wants to go down memory lane. We won't delve too deep back into the discourse. So Ella left a review, major, major performances in Causeway. Loved Neugbauer's work on Made too. Some really bold choices here again. Start in with the strange and soothing creamy color palette, trying to drum into your head that things will get lighter. It got me. Huge for a feature debut. Love. Very positive Ella review.
Let's take a look back at the films that you and Mia discussed last week. You know, maybe some other things that we wanted to call out and see how things are tracking. First, Armageddon Time from director James Gray. 3.4 average it's hitting on Letterboxd right now. You and Gemma got to talk to James Gray himself on the Letterboxd show Four Faves out this week. Tell me if people haven't listened to that. What's going on over there?
Oh my gosh. One of my favorite episodes, if I can be frank with you, Mitchell.
Word around town from my mother is that it's the best episode of the Four Faves episode.
Well. Okay. That's some high praise. Yeah. James is a cinephile, big time cinephile. Love to hear him talk about movies that influenced Armageddon Time. And moreover than that, I loved hearing his emotional impact of film, you know, how it influences how you feel watching a movie, how you feel being in people's shoes, how you learn, how you like view how there's complexity in human nature. I loved hearing him talk about that stuff in podcast form. And I think you can kind of see some of that in his movies, but to hear him kind of go at length about those topics was really fun for me.
Yeah, it's a very fun episode to listen to. I like that there's you and Gemma just kind of let him go.
Yes.
He's always been like one of my favorite people to check out interviews with. And yeah, he just has such a way with words. And he's this kind of guy who just has like this encyclopedia in his head of like every film he's ever seen. And also just like, I can't stand these people who just know quotes in their head from movies, from like author books that they've read. They can just pull quotes out. Like, yeah, it's just in there. And I'm very jealous of it. It sounds very smart and I have never been able to do it. I don't know a quote of anything, but it's a great episode.
You could quote your Don't Look Up review though, I bet. That's probably at the top of your mind.
I don't know it. I don't know it.
Armageddon Time sitting at a 3.4 average. Wendell and Wild, 3.6 average. Emma Hodge left a review. This was so much fun. The attention to detail and design of the animation are amazing. Sign me up for more Henry Selick and Jordan Peele projects like this. So high praise on the Wendell and Wild drop on Netflix.
Yeah, I watched that this weekend. Pretty fun stuff. Pretty fun. Mm-hmm. The design of it is so cool. I mean, oh, I just love seeing stop motion done well.
All Quiet on the Western Front, 4.0 average. So I might need to sit and watch All Quiet on the Western Front. A brutal, Signs of Light left review. A brutal and emotional war film that's right up there with the best of them. Watch Peter Jackson's They Shall Not Grow Old and then the stellar 1917 before watching this. 1917 is, I love 1917.
You're a big what did you 1917
think? Fan. What did you think of 1917? I can't tell if this is like a Mitchell, like 2.5 star, don't believe the hype 1917, or you enjoyed it.
I gave it 2.5. You were right on the money. I thought it was fine. It's a good theater watch. I feel it's a little bit 1917, I think, was a little bit too the like one take thing for me, felt a little bit too like gimmicky, mm-hmm, and like video gamey in a way where like I just felt it was almost like exploitative, kind of like it almost felt like it was like devaluing the like tragedy of like what's going on in a situation like that. But I mean, it's a compelling watch for sure.
Interesting.
I'm curious to check out All Quiet on the Western Front. Jack did you know leave a note for us that All Quiet on the Western Front has entered the top 50 of 2022 on Letterboxd at number 25, and it's a rare Netflix movie to actually move up in ratings when it hits its Netflix release. So yeah, I mean, we're going to have to check that one out.
What else did you watch this week? What else?
Yeah, so one other film that is available on streaming now that I finally got to catch up with is Barbarian. It's on HBO Max. Slim, 4.5 stars for Barbarian, one of your favorites of the year. I maybe wasn't as euphoric with it as you were, but I still liked it. I mean, I think especially for like mainstream modern horror, I think it's better than most of what the slop that we're getting these days, mm-hmm, is. It's aesthetically, it's very, very compelling. It's very interesting to watch. I liked the first half a little bit more than the second half. And I think it's because the first half with Georgina Campbell and Bill Skarsgård, it like is constantly taking you down these like really drawn out paths that it's like really taking its time, making you feel like it's going in a specific direction. And then at the last second, it swerves into like a totally different direction. And it like does that over and over again in that first half, but not in a way where it feels like they're just like trying to throw twists at you for no reason or anything, in a way that really just keeps you on your feet, that I really enjoyed. And I know that, you know, our coworker Flynn from our social media team got to chat recently Scream King himself, Justin Long, about Barbarian.
Yeah, Flynn asked Justin about some other movies. Like, if folks dug Barbarian, what else should they check out? Or, you know, what potentially inspired Barbarian? So here's what Justin had to say.
That's such a good question. Well, I would go to Zach posted, the director, he posted a list of movies that inspired him. And so we've been watching, Kate and I have had those on our list. And so we saw The Audition, this great Japanese movie, Saint Maud, Evil Dead, Sam Raimi, Hereditary, I think is he was inspired by. Don't Look Now, this movie, just, you know, movies that were the classics, I think, like they're classics for a reason, like The Exorcist, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they're done in, they're very like, there's something very realistic about them, and and simple. That's what I've noticed about those classics is, and I felt like Zach's movie is both of those things. There, it's very, the premise, the characters, it's contained, but it's told in a way that really like highlights the characters' experiences rather than just gross shit happening and cheap scares, you know, or like the same old axe wielding maniac, you know. It requires a little bit of like investment in the characters, which is cool. And thanks to everyone on Letterboxd for writing, you know, even the bad reviews, just for participating in the conversation. It's just nice to be in something that people are talking about, and it's generating conversation.
Do you think Justin was directly referencing your review in that comment?
I think so. I think that Justin's always checking out my reviews. He's told me, you know, he doesn't have a Letterboxd, but he bookmarks my page just to check out what I'm watching. And you know, Justin, you know, you're welcome, buddy. You're welcome.
I love that interview with Flynn. There was a couple parts where he talked about he and his partner, I think, were watching Halloween movies, and they had a list. And I like so badly wanted to be like, Justin, Letterboxd. Let's get a move on here. It's perfect
the
time.
Place for lists. You can also on our Horror Reveal HQ, we do have that list from Barbarian director Zach Cregger for the films that influenced Barbarian. So you can check that out over there. Among the horror ones that Justin mentioned, there's also things like Raising Arizona on there, which I think is very fun. And if you've seen Barbarian, I think you can maybe understand why. But yeah, check that out over on Horror Reveal.
We're running out of tape. 100%. We're running out of time. We need to go right to our watch list.
Mia cannot say whole horror again. We have to present
That's the third refund if anyone is counting along with us. But every week we shuffle our own watch list and we have to watch something in advance of the next episode. We have to whittle down that watch list some way, shape, or form. And I got Under the Silver Lake. This was a big moment last week. I've always wondered what the heck happened to that guy that directed It Follows, and this was the follow-up with Andrew Garfield. If I had seen this in theaters, I probably would have walked out. This is a safe space between you, me, and the listeners. It's bizarre. It's gibberish. Andrew Garfield's ass gets more screen time than any other character. His character is an absolute zilch, but he still gets a ton of action from almost every female character in the movie. I didn't understand it. At one point, I paused it because I thought I was like, it's almost over. There was another hour left.
Long movie.
And I know. So it looked great, though. So I'll give it some positive. It looked great. It had some real style. But it wasn't for me. Very divisive film on Letterboxd too. I think there's some people that really love it, but it also goes the other direction. But no, not for me, not in the least.
Yeah, it's developed like a bit of a cult following. Like its initial reception, I feel like, was mostly negative. And then it's like it's developed like a little bit of a passion for it. I'm in your camp. I love It Follows. So I was very excited for it. I'm an Andrew Garfield fan. And it was like getting comparisons to like Thomas Pynchon novels, and like Inherent Vice is one of my favorite movies, which is based on a Pynchon novel. And so like I was excited for it, very let down by it. Yeah, it just was not the vibes for me. The Garfield character is like such a tool, but in a way that like it doesn't feel like the movie's really acknowledging that he's such a tool. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is. I don't know, but maybe other people think that it is. Our editorial producer, Brian Formo, said that he didn't like it when he first saw it, but he revisited it and came around on it a bit, which I've heard from some other people too, that it's a little bit better on repeat viewing. So maybe I'll give it another shot at some point. I don't know. It's very long.
Do you have a Blu-ray of this?
I don't. I don't.
Oh, so. Wow. Okay. That's a first. That's a first for everything.
If I hadn't seen it, maybe I would have the Blu-ray. But,
what about you? What was your shuffle and how did it go?
So yeah, my shuffle was a movie that I had on Blu-ray that I had not seen, called Convoy, directed by Sam Peckinpah. It is a movie about truckers battling cops. That's basically it. There's an early bar fight set to banjo music that turns into like basically this all-out like road battle between truckers and cops. It's like got these elaborately constructed like set pieces, but. Reading up like on the background of it, like it all feels like it makes sense. It's all choreographed so well and comes across great on screen. But reading up on the behind the scenes of the movie revealed to me how chaotic it actually was. Like, Peckinpah was apparently so like effed up on cocaine, quaaludes, and vitamin shots that James Coburn basically like ghost directed the movie. He was like the assistant director and basically directed the movie. And that despite Convoy being a hit financially, Peckinpah was uninsurable for like 5 years until he directed his last movie, The Osterman Weekend, like 5 years after this. It's a wild movie to watch. Very fun. Justin LaLiberty in his Letterboxd review described it as Sorcerer meets Roadhouse, which I think is pretty accurate, honestly. I think so. If that sounds like your vibe, I would check out Convoy.
That's a rave review for you. As soon as you said quaaludes and vitamin shots, I think I was in at that point.
I think you dig it. It's on Tubi, so.
Oh, Tubi Army. It's our time once again. Ian Pratt left a review tagged Weekend Watchlist, Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, which I believe it or not, I also watched last week. Caught the Slimfluence and watched this on a whim for a made-for-TV movie. This was way better than it had to be. Perfect Halloween viewing. Yeah, that one's interesting. This one was on Shudder, and it is a TV movie. It was fun. Good 3.5-star, maybe three-star viewing for Night of the Scarecrow.
Mrs. Darcy reviewed Stars at Noon, my beloved Stars at Noon, which is on Hulu now. Mrs. Darcy says, Claire Denis creates a sensual, thrilling, and shyly comedic whirlwind of a film that is at times boring, I disagree, but sensual enough throughout to keep the Denis neophyte entertained. If you're here to watch two hot people be hot in the literal and figurative sense, Stars at Noon certainly fits the bill. Great movie. Check it out. Claire Denis heads. We're here. Two movies this year, Claire Denis.
I saw a lot of divisive reviews about that movie. Also.
It's pulling a Silver Lake.
Trademark that. We need to put that on a shirt, maybe. All right. We need to head to our watch list. It's time to shuffle again. If you want to also finally do some work on your watch list, join us alongside your watch list. Head to there. Filter by stream only, make it easy for us. And then I'm going to sort by shuffle. And the first one that I get, oh God, oh my, 2005, Terrence Malick.
No.
The New World. A drama about explorer John Smith and the clash between Native Americans and English settlers in the 17th century, streaming on Canopy. 3.7 average. 4 stars from Mitchell.
4 stars from Mitchell. Now, so you got to watch the theatrical cut and the director's cut. That's like 45 minutes longer, I think.
You think Canopy has all those cuts on there? I don't think so.
I don't know what's going on over on Canopy. We'll see what happens. I'll let you borrow my criteria.
All right, your turn to shuffle.
My film is Breaking Away, directed by Peter Yates, 1979. What? Dave, 19, has just graduated high school with his three friends, the comical Cyril, the warm-hearted but short-tempered Moocher, and the athletic, spiteful, but good-hearted Mike. Now Dave enjoys racing bikes and hopes to race the Italians one day, and even takes up the Italian culture, much to his friends' and parents' annoyance. That's a weird synopsis, but...
That is a weird synopsis. How about Jackie Earle Haley being in this movie in 1979, and in the backdrop, he looks the same as he does today.
Yeah,
somehow.
He was in Bad News Bears back then, too, the OG. He has he's not changed with age. I know, I'm excited to watch it. I mean, it's been on my watch list for a while. I own it. it's on HBO Max.
Thanks so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow Mitchell, Slim, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. And if you had the time, maybe consider rating the podcast on Spotify or leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, as it helps spread the word about the show.
Thanks to our crew, and thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. Thanks to Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript. And thanks to you for listening. Weekend Watchlist is a Tape Deck production.
This is a Tape Deck podcast.